Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Rec-Tec Grills, more than a grill, a lifestyle, built by grillers for grillers. Grill up for the holiday season. R-E-C-T-E-Q, Rec-Tec with a Q.com. Trent Dilfer, how about this story? So I've known Trent for a long time. In fact, story time by Uncle Colin. So years ago, I worked at another company. I don't know what happened to them. And I brought Trent Dilfer on as a guest. And I went up, I forget the guy's name. I think it's Bob Eaton or something. So I walked up. He was a big manager type. And he'd been there forever. And I said, hey, you guys need to get Dilfer and put him on the air. And he goes, the quarterback, Trent Dilfer? I said, just trust me. He's going to be a great broadcaster. And so after one spot. And they eventually did. And Trent went there. And then Trent and I would talk all the time. And then about a couple of years ago, Trent's like, you know, I want to do more than I played football and I broadcast football, but I want to change people's lives. And that's how Trent thinks. And so he gets into this coaching thing. And for years and years, I told him he should get in coaching. He's like, oh, these guys have no life. I want to watch my girls play volleyball. It's a terrible life. But he went and said, I'm going to do high school. So he goes to Nashville, Tennessee. I don't know how he found this place. It's called Lipscomb Academy head football coach. Year two, they're in the state championship. He's got all sorts of NFL guys on the staff and a big facility. And so it's fun when you watch somebody and they've got these goals. And now enough of sucking up. Let's go talk to Trent Dilfer, 15 years in the NFL, blah, blah, blah. He still needs to shave to help that. Look at that beard. What is going on? So, they just practiced. He got off the field. They practiced in snow. Who knew it snowed in Tennessee? But apparently it did. So I want to start with this, relationships. And listen, it's hard. When people are successful, they don't want to change. And Brady's the most successful player ever. And Bruce Arians has had success. And I never worried about the age and the arm stuff. I don't worry about that. But I did always say, boy, these are different guys. Their lifestyles, their language. And I look at it and I think, I could see in a year, Josh McDaniels coming down and Bruce saying, hey, it's been a hell of a career. I don't know. There's something, Trent, here with Bruce and Tom. I don't want to overreact on a Monday. But they are different cats, right? You see that, right?
I totally agree with you. And it was interesting when this thing went down the offseason and Tom went to Tampa, all the questions were, how are they going to coexist? And I just used the word interesting. I had my doubts, but I just thought it would be very interesting. You have a coach that's really lived by the machete, right? His entire career is no risk it, no biscuit. Like, he wants to take the machete and chop the opponent's head off on every play. And then you have the greatest of all time, Tom Brady, that's done it with a surgical tool. You know, he's done it through just dissecting the opponent, play in and play out, death by a thousand cuts. And I'm like, I don't know how these things are going to blend. And now we're seeing it play out. You're seeing a quarterback that DNA is to take a defense and just surgically tear it apart. And now you have a coach that keeps calling these home run shots. And you can see the disconnect. I mean, you can see him get a big play, a chunk play, and then Tom's like, okay, great. Now we have field position. Let's go dissect the defense. And then in comes another big play call. And people wonder, why is Tom so bad on these down-the-field passes? I don't know if it's he's bad or they just keep calling too many of them. It's not, in the NFL, you just can't call shot after shot after shot. Defenses kind of realize that and start playing back. And you can see the quarterback saying, wait a second, where's the six-yard option route? Where's the nine-yard tight end crossing route? There's just not enough of that to fit his game. And I really put the blame on Arians and Byron Leftwich for not calling the game around their quarterback. They're calling a system game. They're not calling the game around their QB, who happens to be the greatest that's ever lived.
So it's interesting. When you were on the Ravens championship team, I've always felt teams that are champions built on defense, the Detroit Pistons, the Jordan team is more than people think, the Ravens team you were on, even some of the Bradshaw, the Steeler teams. There's a sensibility that defense and toughness travels on the road. It's week to week. You got the same Ravens defense every week. But offensively geared dynasties, which is the Warriors, the late Kobe and Shaq, Kansas City looks like they could be. it's tougher because when points come easy and they're brilliant and they're fun, it is hard to create urgency when you score 17 points in like four plays. And when I watch Kansas City, I think managing the egos could be part of this, right? Like, it doesn't feel like your Raven team, the psychology of this team.
It really doesn't. And I'm frankly unfamiliar with how you operate in this mode. I never played for a great offensive team, but you do study the history of the league and you study these great offenses. And at some point, they're going to get pushed back on. It's not going to be so easy. And then you start looking at critical moments. How do they perform in critical situations? So third down, we know they're fantastic. I mean, Patrick Mahomes can keep any play alive. He's magical on third down. End of game, end of half, magical. But then you get into the tight red area, and I think that's how teams are going to defend them. They know they can't stop them between the 20s. But you get in that tight red area, and that space decreases, and you can't use your speed enough. And what do? They do a lot of trick plays in the red area.
Yeah.
If you go back and look at Kansas City Chiefs, they use a lot of trickeration, a lot of misdirection, a lot of unique stuff. And it's amazing when it works. In fact, we're stealing stuff here at the high school game from them. However, you're going to come up against a team that's going to play man coverage, take away all those trick plays, not let the misdirection get them, and their ability to score touchdowns in the red area will determine whether they can win another world championship. Now, I don't want to say they can't because they've been phenomenal, but if you're looking for an area when they get pressed on, when they get pushed back, it's going to be the closer they get to that goal line. Steve Young used to say all the time when I worked with them, the more field goals you kick, the closer you are to losing. They got to score touchdowns when they get deep against these great defensive teams.
You know, you've built a high school program up, and then I watch the Saints, and I think to myself, I'm so impressed with an organization. First of all, last 5 years, they have not missed on a first, a second, or a third round pick. They know what they're doing upstairs. But here they bring in Taysom Hill, and last year it's Teddy Bridgewater. They don't miss a beat. They don't miss a beat. I think that's a lot harder than people think. Is it Sean Payton? Is it Taysom Hill? Is it Mickey Loomis, the GM? Like, who gets credit for it?
I think you got to start with that marriage of Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton. They're brilliant. They're like John Schneider and Pete Carroll in Seattle. I mean, they just get it. They think the same thoughts. They have that simpatico relationship that makes them so great. And then I really think Sean Payton is a kingmaker when it comes to quarterbacks. I don't want to take anything away from Drew Brees. He's amazing. He's fantastic. He probably would have been fantastic without Sean Payton. But I think he would even tell you he's the Hall of Fame player he is because of Sean Payton.
Yeah.
5-0 with Teddy Bridgewater last year, 2-0 with Taysom Hill this year. I mean, his ability to find ways to win offensively is incredible. And to call a game around the person taking the snaps goes back to the Brady Arians thing. Sean Payton does have a system. He is player-centric. He is quarterback-centric. He is going to call the game in such a way that your quarterback is going to gain confidence throughout the game, put him in a position to succeed. That's why his quarterbacks are so successful. It's why every single year when there's this free agent quarterback that needs to be rehabilitated, I always say, find a way to the Saints. Do anything you can to go be a Sean Payton and let him rehab you. You will leave your time in New Orleans a much better player than when you got there, much like Mike Holmgren was for so many of us. Our careers were kind of on the skids. We weren't sure. We found a way to get to Mike Holmgren because you knew once you got under Mike's tutelage, once you got underneath that umbrella of teaching, you were going to be a better player when you left, and Sean Payton does the same thing.
So it's interesting. It's kind of fascinating. We know Belichick's a very smart guy. He gives young quarterbacks fits. It doesn't matter if they run like Kyler or they're Josh Allen. They can be big. They can be small. There's never been a coach in my life that you just bet him when he faces any quarterback with under 30 starts. So I watched Kyler yesterday. So tell me, you're the quarterback. You go to the line. And Belichick's the defensive coordinator. What is he doing back there? What's the secret sauce that has all the young quarterbacks? One week they're great. The next week they're learning how to play football. What does he do? What did he do to Kyler?
The biggest thing that I've noticed over the years was it wasn't what he did before the ball was snapped. He actually made it look kind of the same every time he went to the line of scrimmage. It's what happened right after the ball was snapped. There's always going to be a subtle movement, a change on the edges, a change in the secondary, a change on the perimeter that's going to take what you thought was going to be the defense and turn it into something else. And then the biggest thing he does is every young quarterback's the same way. They're going to find three or four things they've settled in on that they really like to do. Okay, that's how they eat their soup. They eat it right-handed with their spoon. And then he's going to take those things away from you and put that spoon in your left hand and make you try to eat soup with your left hand, which is going to be really hard and you're going to spill it all over your face. That's what he does to young quarterbacks is he says, okay, this is Kyler Murray's DNA. He really likes you A, B, C, and D. So we're going to take all those things away after the ball is snapped and see how he does with the rest of the alphabet. My guess, he's not going to be ready to deal with the rest of the alphabet. So that's really been his way of doing it. How he doesn't, I'm not smart enough to figure that out. But I can tell you that every young quarterback I talk to, every time I've studied him, when I played against him, he has found a way that whatever you like to do the most, you didn't get to do that for 60 minutes.
By the way, you've been with the Seahawks and you've watched Pete Carroll's teachings. I said tonight's a very interesting game for me because it's very difficult in the NFL to start a season with a liability and then solve it. Even if you're a great coach, it's hard because there's injuries and there's cap issues. So Seattle had no pass rush. And then John Snyder smartly goes, let's go get Carlos Dunlap. He's unhappy. He's always been a nice rusher. And then they get Jamal Adams. You know, before that, he's more of a linebacker almost than a safety. And then they have a kid named L.J. Collier, who they drafted out of TCU, physical player. He started playing well. So having been there, I said to myself, all the ingredients to win a Super Bowl are there. They don't have a pass rush. And then I watched them against Arizona. I went, okay, timeout. I see a pass rush. So just give me a little bit of Pete Carroll. You've been in the meetings. You've been coaching. And you're a coach now yourself. Can you turn a complete weakness to a strength, or am I being too optimistic with Seattle up front?
No, you're not being too optimistic. It's really the thing that most coaches miss. I think everybody in the talent and coaching business understands the acquisition of talent is important. Where most miss it is the development of that talent. And that's why Pete Carroll could go take over a high school program tomorrow and do what he did at USC and what he's done with the Seahawks, because him and his staff don't just believe in the acquisition of talent, which they've done, but it's the day in, day out development of talent. And when you do that and you bring it together, you get better at something that you weren't very good at to start with. And that's what you're seeing him do in Seattle right now. Is they didn't panic when they weren't getting a pass rush. Now they went out and acquired more talent, but then you have to develop that talent. You have to have it mesh with the rest of your players on defense too. They've tweaked their system a little bit. They're not going to say, we're just going to do this system because this is what we do. They're going to tweak their system around that talent that they've brought in and that they've developed. So they do as good a job as anybody of the development of their team throughout the season. And too often these NFL GMs and coaches say, this is who we are, and what you have is what you get the most out of it. They say, no, this is who we are, in preseason. Here's who we are the first quarter of the season. Here we are the second half of the season. Here's who we are after Thanksgiving. And that's really where Pete and Snyder have made their hay, is after Thanksgiving, because they've invested so much in the development of their team that they're going to play their best football after Thanksgiving. And that's really what you're trying to do when you want to become a championship team.
Lipscomb State Championship game is Thursday. Who do you guys play, by the way?
We play CPA, our rival, who we beat for the first time in 10 years in Week 10. But I don't think either team played their best football. So there should be a dogfight for the state championship.
All right, I can't believe your wife hasn't made you shave that thing yet. Good luck to you going forward, buddy. Trent Dilfer, good seeing you.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
All right, good stuff. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, speaking of Tennessee, the Titans put on a dominant performance against the Colts in their 45-26 win.
Depending on the week you see them, they're scary. Like, when they're good, they pushed the Colts around the field for 3.5 hours.
Well, we're showing a guy right there who usually takes a lot of responsibility for that, Derrick Henry. Another huge day with 27 carries and 178 yards. Season high 3 touchdowns. It was his 3rd straight game with over 100 rushing yards and 7th of the season. So they're now 8-3 and in first place in the AFC South.
Look how much bigger he looks than Darius Leonard.
Yes, he's spectacular. There's just no really way to define Derrick Henry. The Colts dropped to 7-4. It really comes down to him. I've been saying this all year, but if you just look at the numbers, it's what it is. In week 7 through 10, he averaged 19.5 carries and 89.5 yards. had 2 touchdowns, and the Titans were 1-3. In the last 2 games, averaged 27.5 carries, 155.5 yards, had 4 touchdowns, and the Titans are 2-0. He leads the league in rushing yards and has 127 yards lead over Dalvin Cook. Yeah. He's second in rushing touchdowns with Dalvin Cook, but they go as he go. Obviously, you don't want to consistently have your running back having that many carries. It's absurd, but that's what their offensive identity is.
If they can, you know what? My takeaway is if you can give him week 17 off, like, they, you know, you just, he's one of those guys. He recharges fast. He likes a lot of carries.
Yeah, and some running backs like a lot of carries. Yeah. Like, it's a huge number,
obviously. Eric Dickerson
always
says that.
Yes, yes. He loved having a lot of carries. You get into a rhythm and you can be more consistent. That's just how some guys are. But he's incredible, and you're absolutely right. Week to week, it's hard to predict what the Titans are going to be unless Derrick Henry is getting the ball a lot. So, tonight's game's a little interesting.
I think
one.
It's actually a great Monday Night Football game. Very interesting.
Expect to see a lot more of Jalen Hurts on the field when you see the Eagles hosting the Seahawks tonight. Carson Wentz will be the starter, but Hurts has reportedly been getting more first-team reps this week. And the Eagles are planning on using him a lot more tonight than in any game this season.
Well, most of these young quarterbacks are having success, so roll it out there. I mean, listen, you can't keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. Give him 12 snaps and see what it looks like.
I believe that's the definition of insanity.
Yeah.
Carson Wentz has been sacked 40 times this season, the most of any quarterback. But he's 3-6-1, 58.3 completion percentage, 14 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, and 10 fumbles.
He's just not accurate enough. 58% is terrible in this league. This league is built now for 64%.
I'm with you. I don't know what the Eagles have to lose. This is a terrible season for the NFC East.
Right.
Carson Wentz is obviously struggling. Now, look, he's still starting, and they're just saying you're going to see more of Jalen Hurts. But why not? Mix it up. Try and get the win tonight and get some momentum going. I don't know. You've got to try something.
Listen, Washington, Dallas, and the Giants are all playing better football. You could very easily end up in last place.
Yes.
So get it together. Win games.
I mean, somebody's gonna mess around and win this division, and then someone's going to be in last place, and it's not going to be surprising either way. Finally, I felt like this was the highlight of the weekend. I know this has been the talk of the internet since it happened, and I didn't know what to expect.
And
we talked about it actually quite a bit on the show leading up to it. Yes, I did watch this. Mike Tyson returned to the ring this weekend for an exhibition match against Roy Jones Jr. I did not know what to expect.
Either
I had
I.
seen him. He looked like he was in great shape. He lost 100 pounds, which is remarkable. And both of them looked decent. I felt like Mike won. And I agree with you. It did look as if he was not really trying to take Roy's head off in the fight, but it exceeded my expectations for a 54-year-old eight-round fight.
Mike Tyson looks quicker, substantially quicker than George Foreman did.
He does still have a lot of speed.
Absolutely. He moves well. And by the way, I think he throws punches with a certain strength better than Foreman. I watched George Foreman come back. Tyson's better than Foreman, in my opinion. Now, Foreman had a great jaw. It was hard. Foreman was just, it was a mountain. And I don't know if Mike had, I think once you get 55, you don't want to get hit in the chops. But when I watched Mike's movement, I'm like, oh, he's fine. Mike's fine. You know, Joy, it's like the late Kobe Bryant. Final game, 60 points. Nobody thinks Tyson can fight 4 fights in a year like when he's 20. But if you're telling me you get Mike Tyson from today 4 months for one fight, he'll give you... Mike, you don't lose that. If you took Dan Marino today and just said, go throw one practice, he didn't lose his arm. Dan could still make all the throws. Dan lost his legs. He didn't want to do camp.
Yeah, you're not asking for a whole season.
No, you're asking for... Drew Bledsoe has said this. He goes, oh, I can spin it. I can throw the ball. He goes, my legs... They just said, no more camp, no more preseason. I can't take the snaps.
I mean, I thought it was really entertaining. It was fun to participate in with everyone. Now, the fight before with Nate Robinson was a...
Wow.
Disaster. I literally screamed. Like, they hit the bell, and Nate came running out, and I screamed. Like, I just watching the difference between Mike and Roy and that fight with Jake Paul and Nate Robinson.
Well, Nate Robinson,
like, these are boxers. Do you see how they're not running around the ring swinging like this? Like, they're boxing.
I'm like, Nate, this kid wants to be a boxer. He's had a fight. Nate was just like Nate was fighting what you do if you fought your brother.
Yes.
I was a family member.
This is boxing. Like Snoop said, you don't play with boxing. This is your boxing. It was so crazy to watch, but I enjoyed the whole entire evening.
Yeah, and it was an event.
I thought it was really well done.
Good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Three-word game every NFL game succinctly described in three words next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Life-changing sleep is all about what's underneath. Casper.com, code HERD. 1,500 perforations create a perfect cooling system. We call it the three-word game, Joy. You can succinctly, when forced, describe every NFL game in just three words. We do it every Monday at this time in Best for Last, and here we go.
Raiders at Falcons.
What was that? Biggest blowout loss since Gruden returned 2 years ago. 5 turnovers, 11 penalties. First game without a touchdown this year for the Raiders. Fell behind, a lot of 3rd and 8s. Just didn't look prepared. Bad on 3rd down, 3 of 12, 11 penalties, and Atlanta remains my Bermuda Triangle. I bet them they lose. I stay away, they win. Raiders meet Atlanta.
Dolphins at Jets.
Refuel this jet. Just fire everybody. Trade Darnold, fire Gase. What a mess. It was actually the first game this season that Sam Darnold had all of his receivers. They scored a field goal on their opening drive and did not score in the rest of the games. They had 3 points against the Dolphins this year in 2 games. 3 points.
Cardinals at Patriots.
Youth versus wisdom. 6 penalties by the Cardinals. They now lead the NFL in total penalties. Talented, but young and mistake-prone. Kyler Murray, 67 passer rating. And the Patriots offense won despite a season low in yards, 180, and passing yards, 69.
Panthers at Vikings.
Buy Panthers stock. I really like this team. I know they lost, but they have 6 losses by 1 possession under Matt Rhule. They are rebuilding the defense. And this kid, Jeremy Chin, rookie safety, 2 fumble recoveries, returned for a touchdown on consecutive plays. Again, they drafted well. You don't have to win games to impress me. I love what I see with Carolina. Not surprised. That's why Teddy Bridgewater would work. Moves the chains, coachable. Doesn't make big mistakes. Really should have won that game yesterday. They missed a 54-yarder to win it.
Browns at Jaguars.
Least impressive win. Baker Mayfield, 4 straight games with fewer than 20 completions. Listen, Cleveland's kind of figured out a way to do it. We're going to run it. We're not going to put Baker in a situation to throw on 3rd and long. In fact, off play action, if you take play action passes away from Baker Mayfield, he's just going to drop and throw. He's near the bottom of the NFL, but Kevin Stefanski, to his credit, has figured out what they do. They run it, they keep quiet, and they play as good a defense as their personnel allows.
Titans at Colts.
Remember the Titans. 8-3, first place. This is the team last year that shocked Baltimore. They've won 3 of their last 4. Derrick Henry leads the NFL in rushing. Ryan Tannehill, 8 straight games with a touchdown pass. So, you listen, they had a couple of stinkers. That game against the Bengals, pretend it didn't happen. But, boy, Indianapolis is physical, and they just punched them right in the forehead.
Giants at Bengals.
1-3 straight. And during that streak, the Giants are +7 in turnover differential. They've held the lead in the fourth quarter in 7 straight games. They have not lost a game by more than 1 possession since week 3. Again, they're well coached. They're not terribly explosive on offense. And let's keep our fingers crossed on Daniel Jones. He got hurt. And the second half was just get out of there, survival, ugly second half of the Giants.
Chargers at Bills.
This is Linsanity. Anthony Lynn's in trouble. Justin Herbert's too good to be 2-8. The play calling at the end of the game, they called a running play at the goal line with no timeouts and down by 2 scores in the final minute. Their 3 wins are against the 3 worst teams in the league, Jets, Jags, Bengals. Anthony Lynn's a nice guy. He's got some presence and alpha, but it's not working, and they just look really challenged in the second half of games.
49ers at Rams.
That looked goffle. Four total turnovers. Jared Goff, season low in completions, touchdown passes, passer rating was 52.9. And it should be noted, Sean McVay called him out. Sean McVay tends to be very pro player. So when Sean McVay's, he's had six picks and five fumbles in the last 4 weeks. So Goff right now is a turnover mess.
Saints at Broncos.
Broncos deserve that. Quarterback room got wiped out by COVID-19. I feel bad for players, but in the end, the NFL said, listen, we have protocols and rules. Follow them. They didn't, made an example of them.
Chiefs at Buccaneers.
Foot off gas. Listen, that thing was 17-0 at the end of the first quarter, and it had 48-8 written all over it or something. But, you know, I will say this. Tampa Bay in the second half, I thought, did a pretty good job. A little bit of an offensive identity. They shortened some of the routes. Tom was throwing to Fournette, Ronald Jones. I did think in the second half, the offensive system was more geared toward what Tom does. Under 20-yard throws.
Bears at Packers.
Time to hibernate. Bears trailed 27-3 in the first half, coming off a bye. No direction, like Matt Nagy, but the offense doesn't know what they are. The defense doesn't have a personality. At this point in the season, I got to be able to watch you and know what you're striving to do. And with Chicago, either side of the football, I can't. Speak for Yourself is around the corner. For John and Joy, we'll see you tomorrow in Los Angeles.